Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi there, welcome to the final episode of Series 9 of Rahalastapa with Ellis James. I know a lot of you have been looking forward to this one, and you won't be disappointed, it's really good. If you like these podcasts and want to help us to make more, we're currently doing a Kickstarter to make the video episodes of this. Go to gofasterstripe.com/Kickstarter. We're getting really close to the target, and there's some lovely rewards there as well. Emergency question books, t-shirts, access to the secret channel with extra interviews. So you might want to pay for those anyway, and then that money will be ploughed back into making more podcasts. If we hit our target and get over it, we'll just put the extra money into the next series. So that's all very exciting. Series 10 is shaping up really fantastically. We're recording them from the 3rd of October. Go to leicestersquaretheatre.com to buy tickets. The first show will have Armando Iannucci and Hans Chuan, two of the hardest comedian names to say in all of Christendom, it seems. The 10th of October, we have Dane Baptiste. The 17th of October, we have Chris Addison. 28th of November, we have David Baddiel. We're putting in new names all the time. The 31st of October looks like a very exciting one, so go and buy tickets for that. We're recording more As It Occurs to Me. As you may know, there's a free audio extra bonus thing that's gone up on the feeds at iTunes and the British Comedy Guide if you want to hear some of that for nothing. If you want to come and see us perform those live, that would be terrific. Go to leicestersquaretheatre.com, and the 16th of October is the next one. There's plenty of tickets left, and all the money we get from the door from that one will be ploughed right back into making more sketches, and it's a lot of fun, I think, to come and see it, so please come along if you can. And I am on tour with my new show, The Best. It's a best of show, 90 minutes of my favourite material. You can see all of those tour dates on my website, richardherring.com. In fact, if you go to richardherring.com/the_best/tour, you can see if I'm coming near to you, and you can book ahead now for most of those dates. I'm playing Sheffield on the 6th of October, Manchester on the 2nd of November, and Bridgewater on the 8th of December. So I will see you at those, I hope. Anyway, thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy this final episode of what I think has possibly been the best series of Richard Herring's Square Theatre podcast, but that's not for me to say, is it?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who is renowned for his professionalism. It is Richard Herring! of the show. That walk is generally the walk that my daughter, my 17-month-old daughter, if you tell her off, she walks in a sarcastic way. It's really funny. She's much funnier. I must get her on to do this. She could take over from me. That would be good. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was out in the streets, and there was a 40-year-old man in a suit playing Pokemon Go. And he... But he called this Rehelastopus. So I don't know if that's catching on. It seems to be catching on. It's the last show in this current series. But we'll be back in October with more. I don't know. This one might be going out after the other one started. So there's loads of fantastic new guests going to be, and old guests, I expect, coming back for the next series. So do look out for that, people at home. Got you again. Tricked you by waiting for the show. But we'll just say goodbye to lots of... There's our audience this week. There's got a lot of people in there to see such rubbish people. I wish I understood what made you want to buy tickets to this, because if you could just send me a list. There's a man waving over there, even though I wasn't pointing the camera out. The camera was over there, and he started waving. But then, you can see, there he is. It's really, you're going to be famous, mate. That is, people are going to be stopping it. Thumbs up, that was as well. There we go. You got your hat on indoors? Yeah, how's that working out for you? Your head's warm? Yeah, that's nice. It's always a risk, that, because it can turn out to be because of some terrible disease. But I did see you last week and you were all right, so, you know. Hello, ladies, how are you doing? Are you having a nice time? What's brought you along to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast this week?
Well, we're on holiday.
You're on holiday? Where have you come from?
From the United States, from Texas.
They're from Texas? Does this go out in Texas? Have you heard the podcast before? You were walking around Leicester Square and couldn't think of anything to do?
No, we watch it.
You watch it, like, in Texas? What's been... must be confusing with all these nobody British comedians we have. We're having on. You've chosen a very bad week to come and sit. What's your name?
Karen.
And what's your name?
Sarah.
Sarah, that's very, very confident, aren't they? Are you going to vote for Donald Trump in the upcoming elections? Yeah, that's what they all say. I bet your Texas votes for him. I bet you anything you like. Well, thanks for coming over. It wasn't just to see us, though, right?
No.
That's not... We're international. That's the thing. It's international. It goes everywhere, David. You have no control over it. I mean, I wouldn't let Texans listen to it. If there was a filter I could put on it, I would keep them out. Just the kind of guy, build a wall, and I could build a wall, David. That's real. Very good. I had the same thought, but you beat me to it, and that is why I am a professional comedian. It was a three-year-old child is funnier than me, and a nuclear physicist. What a strange one. I think I might be in a hospice. You know, I don't think this even happened the first time. I think this is just me inventing scenarios of how I wished my career had gone. And this is what I wished for. This is better than whatever I actually did. So, look, we're going to crack straight on. It gets surreal, doesn't it? Going to crack straight on. Our final guest of the series. We've literally saved the best until last. Apart from David Cross and pretty much everyone else we've had on. No. Oh, no, I was forgetting, like, Matthew Crosby and Nish Kumar. You're better than them. he is probably best known for his appearance on 8 out of 10 Cats Does Deal or No Deal. That's probably why you've come over from America to see him. Do you have 8 out of 10 cats in Texas? No. Do you have 10 cats in Texas? Yeah. Then you probably do have 8 out of 10 cats. It's confusing, this. It must be confusing. It's a confusing... Must be confusing for you. Ladies and gentlemen, James O'Shaughnessy! Thank you very much. Come in. I'm drunk on tiredness. Very popular. Very popular young man.
Too kind.
That's very nice. So, what do you remember about... let's get that out of the way. Out. 10 Cats Does Deal or No Deal. What was your part in
that? I'd had probably the heaviest night out of my life. Mm. The night before. and was in no fit state to be on a panel show mashup.
Right.
And I don't know if it's available online, but I say literally nothing. I open my box and I let the box do the talking.
Yeah.
So I had 5p or something.
Yeah.
And they said, Ellis, open your box. And I just went. From what I remember, there was a mix of sort of friends of the of Sean Locke and John Richardson,
right,
who tended to be comics, and some sort of normal people,
yeah.
Civilians,
yeah.
And one of the civilians was 85, and they had to get her a chair, and they had to get me a chair, so there were there were 20 people opening boxes, and only two of us had chairs.
Was Noel Edmonds part of this jamboree, or was it Jimmy?
Yes, it was Jimmy. I used to do warm up on Deal or No Deal,
right?
As in on the real program.
Yeah, we had a few of those.
But it wasn't Noel. It was Jimmy, I think. Right. But the only times on the evening itself, I got very few laughs. The only laughs I got was every now and then I'd ask to go to the toilet and they'd say no. None of which made the edit. And then Nick Helm asked to go to the toilet and that did make the edit. And obviously they had to make a choice. Who's going to be the toilet guy? And he's already got anger.
Yeah.
But they took the toilet stuff away from me. And
it didn't become a recurring one though, did it? Like the countdown one is kind of...
No, I mean... part of the blame for that lies at my door.
I think it probably does. I can't imagine Noel Edmonds would like this happening. That's why I bet he was asked to be involved.
He's an interesting one, Noel Edmonds.
Yeah.
Because I've met him,
yeah,
having done warm-up. And when you meet him, sort of up close, he looks like a lion who's gone to a fancy dress party dressed as a man. You're sort of half expecting a sort of tail to swish out of his slacks.
Yeah.
But yeah, incredible posture, because he's only about 5'8", but he really makes the most of it.
I was disturbed when his beard changed colour, and it was never really mentioned.
But yeah.
He became more sort of pantomime villain.
Yes, it did. And then he did the Halloween episode dressed as a lion tamer, which really fucked with my mind.
Interesting, man. So,
I was, as a student of this podcast, I was trying to work out which of the obscure things I've done you were going to choose. I thought you might have gone for Llewap Blew.
I didn't spot that one.
It was a Welsh language puppet show for the under fives, I wrote.
Okay.
which was a stand-up comedy club, but set in a zoo and all the animals. So very capable compa. It was a lion.
Yeah.
And then the monkey was talented but very nervous. So, got 10 episodes out of that idea.
That sounds
good. Llewap Blew. Literally, Llewap Blew was the name of the compa. Literally translated, that means lion son of hare. But
maybe if you hadn't done it in Welsh, it would have done better.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking at it purely as a numbers game.
Yeah. Because there's Rah Rah, the Noisy Lion, is one of my least favourite of my daughter's shows she watches.
I haven't seen that. My daughter's very similar age to yours, but my daughter's hugely into Peppa Pig, obvious.
Yeah.
The Beatles of that sort of world. and Bing, who I think needs to fucking grow a pair.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've... Have you seen Bing?
I have seen Bing.
He is such a whiner.
He is. But Mark Rylance plays his carer.
Yeah.
The Shakespearean Oscar-winning actor.
Yes.
Who's the big friendly giant, and he also plays...
Yeah, he does.
His knobhead or something he's called. So it's a very odd world, because it's... they're these children. They're basically toddlers. They're all different animals.
Yes.
Bing is a...
he's a rabbit.
Rabbits, yeah. He's got... Yeah. But then they're looked after by carers
who are
cloth dolls.
But the carers are all cloth dolls,
yeah.
And one of the cloth dolls in the English version is West Caribbean.
Yes.
And from the West Indies or from the Caribbean. And in the Welsh language version, because my daughter watches both,
okay,
she is from Cefnaethyn in the Gwendraeth Valley. And it's very different. So,
slightly different vibe.
I did mean to start because you are from another country. I did mean to start by speaking in Welsh to you.
I'd have absolutely loved it.
Hello, it's me. I am from Wales. Hello, would you like some seaweed? That's my...
You've obviously been to get Nathan. It's pitch perfect.
Yeah. Yep. I could do the whole interview like that if you like.
If you would, yeah. It sort of made me feel at home.
It would be offensive not to, wouldn't
it? Yeah.
So,
I could ham my accent up a bit and do it back if you want. I don't know if that would render the whole thing unmissable.
Thank you for having me, Richard!
It's easy Welsh, isn't it?
It's just... an absolute pleasure to be here!
It's an easy language to learn Welsh, that's what I've discovered. Yeah. You were born in Haverford West.
Yeah, Withybush. There isn't a Labour ward there anymore. Fact fans. Oh,
okay.
No. If you're pregnant in Pembrokeshire, now you've got to drive to Carmarthen.
Wow. There's a place. Well, Haverford West.
Be more of this.
Haverford West, as you know, is the lowest fordable point on the Western Cladow, or however you say that.
And it's also the birthplace of Rhys Ifans, the actor, even though he was brought up in Ruthin, North Wales. I could do this literally all night.
And what, did you ever visit Merlin's Bridge when you were there?
Did I ever visit Merlin's
Bridge? Yeah.
Mate, there's a fucking creamery there.
Is there?
So, yeah, occasionally, from time to time. Yeah.
What I like about it is all the names. There was, like, someone called Wizzo who lived there. And I was looking at, it's like... There's a place called Merlin's Bridge.
Merlin's Bridge, it flooded, late 80s.
Merlin's Bridge.
And the creamery used to make our back garden smell, but then they changed the filters in the mid-80s. Okay. So that's not something I really remember, but my dad doesn't half stop. Doing half stop banging on about it.
So how old were you when you left?
I was about 11, and then we moved to Carmarthen.
Yeah.
Which is
do you think the cable stayed bridge across Blue Street was worth £2.8 million in Carmarthen?
Well, it's revitalised Blue Street, so yes. Yeah. Because Blue Street, to be honest, not my words, the words of my grandmother, had gone to the dogs.
Right.
So it's something needed doing, and I'm glad they've done it. It was just a bus station that, and a chicken shop. But now the place is thriving.
Yeah, well, it won an award, that bridge. I mean, £2.8 million is a lot for a bridge, though, right?
Well, I mean, when you think it's probably going to stand for the next 50 or 60 years, and as I said, it's revitalised Blue Street. It's chicken feet.
Did you ever see Nicky Stevens of Brotherhood of Man in Carmarthen in town when you were...
No, I didn't, but Matthew Stevens, a suka player who I was in primary school with, and he used to wear tassels on his shoes.
Did he? Is he related to Nicky Stevens from Brotherhood of Man?
No, I don't think so, but it's such a... it's a real talent spot, Carmarthen.
It is.
Don't, because I'm only going to name all of the notable people who were born there. So obviously Nicky Stevens from Brotherhood of Man, and then you've got Matthew
Stevens.
Who is,
by the way, the only Welsh person to ever win the Eurovision Song Contest.
Really?
Yeah.
Did Bonnie Tyler not? Oh, she's too big, I suppose, by the time.
She never won the Eurovision Song Contest.
No, she had bigger fish to fry, didn't she, really?
Yeah.
BT.
Only Welsh person, you think, out of all the people who sing in Wales, and just one person's won the singing contest in Europe.
Yeah.
Prejudice, isn't it?
I feel... Oh, Michael Ball. Oh, he's not actually Welsh, is he?
He hasn't won the Eurovision Song Contest.
No, he represented Britain in '92.
I'm not talking about representing.
I know.
Of Welsh people who had a go, but only one has been deemed human enough to win the... And she had to have three other blokes.
Well, you see, the problem is, if it was done at the Commonwealth Games and we were able to represent ourselves rather than be part of the colony of Great Britain...
Yeah.
We'd make a good fist of it, you see.
Yep.
But sadly, we've been subsumed by, England, who are the dominant partner when it comes to British Eurovision entries. Because, you don't really want to get me on this, down this avenue.
I've opened a can of worms.
Yeah, you've
it's
certainly
mainly
are.
The Eurovision that's the problem with the...
Yeah, but, you know, I will talk about it, because it is something I do feel quite passionately about.
Name some of the famous people. What about the Ramsay Bolton was born in... Do you at school with Ramsay Bolton?
Well, if you want famous people from Carmarthen, mate.
Yeah, I do.
John Nash, the architect of Regent Street,
yeah,
spent some time in Carnarvon. I think he was born in England, but he did live in Carmarthen. But he designed Regent Street, Piccadilly. Okay. And, you know, I can see that you're being slightly sort of disparaging towards my John Nash. Well, else, you know, I've given you John Nash, and now I'm raising you, genuinely, Wikipedia it, the inventor of the ball bearing. Was from Carmarthen, yeah.
Wow.
Rod Gilbert.
Rod Gilbert.
My mum worked with his dad.
Yeah, I saw that. What were they doing?
They worked at Trinity College, the sort of university,
yeah.
And
is it a university or is it a sort of university?
It's, well, my mum works there and she will lose her mind if I say that it's a sort of university, but it really is a sort of university. Carmarthen, John Nash, Matthew Stevens, the snooker player, Emir Taru Lewis, the Welsh rugby international, went to my school early 90s.
Not interested in rugby.
Okay, all right then. Neither am I, actually. I'm scraping the barrel. Sophie D, the pornographic actress.
Oh, really?
Come on then. Yeah, yeah. I thought that might be more up your street.
I don't really like porn stars who are indigenous to the United Kingdom. I think I could probably make an
like a sort of reverse Brexit.
I don't. It puts me off.
They're being brought up here and taking that job.
I like it. Just there's something. It's more English, I have to say. I think
you don't like English pornographic actresses.
Yeah, I find the Welsh accent very sexy. My first girlfriend was Welsh. I think.
Oh right. Where was she from?
She was from the Rhondda Valley.
Yeah, that's a very broad church. Which village?
She was from. No, I would remember. No, she was from Merthyr Tydfil.
Oh, lovely stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
God, that
don't get me
remember.
Started on Merthyr Tydfil.
And I like Rebecca from CBeebies, who's also Welsh. She's my favourite one from CBeebies, apart from Fenella.
Well, I mean, if you want sexy Welsh accents, obviously Hugh Edwards.
Yeah. I find
whose father was a druid.
It was
genuinely true. Yeah. In the Eisteddfod, he was part of the bardic circle of druids.
Right.
He keeps that quiet, doesn't he? When he's
I was going to say, is it racist to get a Welshman on and just discuss some people from Wales? But then you have just said one of them was a druid.
Yeah.
So,
and also this is sort of my USP.
Yeah.
Who else? I mean, sexy. Well, I think Bonnie Tyler's accent's quite sexy.
No, actually. I think the Welsh accent's sexy, but I think in porn,
yeah,
just if it's an English accent or even a Welsh accent
she
would put
Bonnie
me
Bonnie Tyler, though. I read a great interview there the other day. I love the people of Swansea, but the town itself is very, very shabby. I thought, Bonnie Tyler.
Yeah. She's right, though.
Yeah,
absolutely. Swansea, I've mentioned this, I'm sure, but I once had a gig in Swansea and I booked a hotel in Swansea.
At the Grand?
No, it was at the university.
Oh, okay.
It was a while ago, like 2004.
At the Taliesin Theatre, saw Macbeth there in 1998. Part of my A-levels.
I stayed in a hotel room and the toilet was in the same room as the bed. There was literally like an alcove. There was an alcove where there perhaps once been a cupboard.
Yeah.
Which was about that wide.
What?
And the toilet was in that, but of course the alcove didn't fit, so it was in the toilet.
Was it one of the obviously you're not going to know this. It wasn't one of the B&Bs on the seafront on Oystermouth Road.
No, I don't think it was. It was I didn't stay there in the end because Lee Nelson...
Oh, right.
Was driving back to London. And I said, I was on first, whichever way round it was.
Yeah.
I realised I had time to go back and pick up my bag and not stay in it was a very cheap hotel,
I
have to
say. I stayed in a hotel in Swansea once, and it was one of those B&Bs, seafront B&Bs.
Yeah.
The bloke, he was like, right then, you're room number four. Number four you are. And then he opened the door to number four, and there was a dog in my bed. And he was like, oh, fucking hell, Prince! Fuck's sake, Prince! and he was trying to he was an old guy and he was trying to chase Prince out of the room, but Prince was he completely had him sort of he had him covered. So Prince was just literally running ring. They were just running around this single bed. Yeah. Like, fly it, Prince! And Prince had even broken into a sweat. And eventually he got rid of Prince. And and I'd forgotten my toothpaste. So about a couple of hours, as I was brushing, I was about to go to bed. And I said, "Oh, sorry, mate. I've forgotten my toothpaste. Could you sell any?" And he went, "What did you want?" I said, "Toothpaste, please." He went, "Fine, give me 2 minutes. Give me a brush." And, so I had to go back to the bedroom to get my toothbrush, and I had to present it to him. He was like, "Right, fucking, I'll be there in 5 minutes." And he went and he came back and he'd put the toothbrush in his pocket. And it was sticking out of his pocket, but there was a pea-sized, as the instructions say, lump of toothpaste on the toothbrush. You're like, "There you go, that's fine, same arrangement in the morning." Yeah, that's great.
That's good service, you wouldn't get that. Maybe they put the toilets in the bedrooms because the dogs stay in there. It's just the only way to get the dog to go to the toilet.
He was wearing the most disgusting pair of tracksuit bottoms I've ever seen in my life. The man, not the dog, obviously.
I went to, for my birthday, which was the 12th of July, if you're interested, I went to quite a posh fish restaurant in near here, actually, Leicester Square.
Oh, yeah.
And it was full of the biggest cunts in the world. And they were all kind of theatre people, and they all knew each other, and they were sort of throwing... It was like producers and stuff, I'm guessing.
Right.
But they're throwing bread at each other and shouting at each other. We were trying
sort
to have
of
a...
Bullingdon
I was trying to, stuff. Yeah, but I was trying for a romantic meal with my wife. We don't get many nights out, as you'll know, as a parent. And a guy walked in who was obviously quite a big, rich guy because he was in there, but he was wearing a kind of cream jacket that looked filthy. And seriously... tracksuit bottoms. Because, I think, obviously he got fat and he just couldn't fit into the trousers. He put on these, they're made out of kind of grey, that very thin, plasticky material.
Oh.
And really dirty. And that's what, if you're rich, you can get away with wearing.
Yeah, you just don't care, do you? Because it's like, I'm a real Beatles nut, right? Yeah. I remember reading an interview with Paul McCartney. He was like, you should start going to posh restaurants and you realise... If you want cornflakes, you just ask for cornflakes. But you're not really getting the best experience if you go into the Ivy or Claridge's and you're asking for fucking cornflakes. Come on, Paul, I know you're brought up in a prefab, but move on. You've made millions. God, I love him.
I love him as well. He's quite.
He's the best one.
He's
the
good.
Best.
He's the quite best mean people. With his. He's quite. Frugal with his money.
He's eating cornflakes in posh restaurants.
Is that... You could get the cornflakes a lot cheaper at the supermarket, but it's
probably
cheap.
Yeah, I bet he's thought of that as well.
He's interesting, Paul McCartney, because, he's Paul McCartney, and yet he has that thing hanging over him his whole life of John Lennon being perceived as the best.
Well, yeah, and that's sort of untrue in that he was single and Lennon was living in Surrey, I think, in a mansion with Cynthia and pretending he wasn't married and just sitting in bed and reading the Daily Mail, whereas McCartney was going to art happenings and sort of weird art installations and jazz nights where people were playing things on blocks of wood and tape loops machines and all that sort of stuff. But the caricature of the Beatles is that he was the cute, sweet, melodic one. Lennon was the acerbic, sarcastic one. And that has stuck for over 50 years. Yeah. Which I think, I read his book many years from now, and he obviously can't get past that. So he subscribes a sort of percentage system to songwriting to every single Beatles song.
Right.
So there'll be some that are obvious Lennon masterpieces. They'll be like, Strawberry Fields, it's obviously John came up with the verse and the chorus, but... The middle eight's mine, and I think it was my idea for the Mellotron. So It's probably 55-11, 45 Bacani. Think, oh, come on, Paul! He also, he only has about 8 anecdotes.
Yeah.
So seasoned McCartney watchers will watch him on Parkinson and things and go, oh, yeah, he did 1, 3, and 6.
But like he, when he talks about Hey Jude, and he says he's played it to John Lennon.
Yeah.
It's this, you know, he's got that sort of thing where he's trying to look modest but not look modest.
Yeah.
And then and he said, I played it to John. I said, oh, I've got the bit of the movement you need is on your shoulder.
Oh, yeah.
But we need to change that. And then John Lennon said, no, you don't, that's the best bit. And then so I left it. So John Lennon's contribution was to say, leave it as it is.
So I think Hey Jude is sort of 98-2 to me. Yeah, but that Hey Jude movement you need is on your shoulder, that's anecdote number 4.
But it's interesting, because I was talking last week, I don't know if you have listened to it yet, but about to Tom Parry, and it's that thing where when you're working with someone, and you know, and then you can get that, if you get into that rivalry with someone, and then it becomes a competition with that other person. That, I just always think, like, you're Paul McCartney, you don't need to even for a second go, hold on, just go, I'm Paul McCartney, I wrote Yesterday for stars.
Yeah, and I think I think he probably is a bit funny about how he gets a sort of slight rough deal out of
it. Yeah, well, he does.
Because people think that he was just the obla-di-obla-da guy.
Yeah.
And or the Frog Chorus, which I have revisited and think is fine. I don't know why everyone, because I'm a big McCartney apologist. People always use that as a stick to beat me with it. I think, listen again, it's great. It's a chorus of frogs, man. It's absolutely fine. What is your problem with that?
I think it's probably aimed at children. But anyway, I do like Paul McCartney, but he drives me nuts as well. Let's ask you an emergency question to get away from Paul McCartney. Let's see where we end up with this week. I've got no idea. What is the worst rumour you ever heard about yourself that is untrue?
Oh, John Robbins told me this.
Right.
This is going to sound like I'm bragging.
Okay.
When I was a very, very new comic, actually, this is absolutely not the worst thing. It's just this is the last one I got told.
Okay.
I'll tell you probably, I'll have a think about the worst one. When I was an open spot comedian, a very new comedian, I sort of wasn't an awful open spot. I was all right as far as open spots go.
Yeah.
And there was a sort of myth on the Cardiff comedy scene that I would turn up at gigs and do okay. And then the promoter or the other acts would say, oh, great, how long have you been going? And I would go, actually, that was my first ever gig. Just to sort of curry favour. And apparently I did this for 2 years and I never, ever did that. That's a complete lie. Yeah. In terms of the worst rumour about me, it would probably be, oh, God, I mean, there have been millions. especially at school and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that I had a penis like a grape and all that sort of,
you know. And all that sort
just
of.
Just all that classic thing. Sort of grape penis stuff.
Penis like a grape.
Penis like a grape. Like a grape as in the fruit. Grape. Yeah. You know, I only had silvery pubes until I was 18. And then, yeah, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And, mainly sort of, mainly penis stuff, basically. Yeah. Sort of. It's just fairly standard.
I heard you had a penis like a grip.
Like a vice.
Yeah.
People
once you're
you
involved you
just with
grab,
it, you can't get away from it. Yeah.
You grab hold and then there's no, you're inside.
Yeah.
You're
like, oh. And then there's a metal bar that you twist and all sorts of awful things happen.
Good. Who would you rather died, Windsor Davis or Matthew Crosby's wife?
Or Matthew Crosby's wife?
Oh, yeah.
As in my friend Matthew Crosby?
Yeah.
Or Windsor Davis, the Welsh actor I've never met?
Yeah. Welsh,
well,
isn't he?
Windsor Davis is about 80. He's had a good innings. I mean, sort of. I don't want to kill him off. But I mean, if I've got to point a gun at one of their heads, then absolutely Windsor. I mean, it sounds now like I'm too enthusiastic about it.
You always had this coming, Windsor. Oh, come on, oh, lovely boy, lovely boy.
All the pleasure he's given everyone. I mean, comparatively, Matthew
Crosby. Exactly, but all that is
Matthew
available
Crosby
on DVD, isn't it? You, or YouTube nowadays.
Yeah.
You can revisit it. There's Charlie Crosby, Matthew yeah. Crosby's wife.
Yeah.
I mean, her whole life is ahead of her.
But in a way, I mean, she's married to Matthew Crosby. Wouldn't it be kinder?
What?
Different from that.
In a kind way. I always feel very guilty about whenever my daughter goes to bed, I say, I'm just going to put her down. And it sounds like I'm so annoyed that I'm just like, oh, God, I've had enough.
So let's talk about that. We are both married to comedian. Well, not yeah. only married, but yes, you are getting married, are you?
Yeah, we're engaged. Yeah. She asked me, actually.
Yeah, she proposed you on Leap Year.
Yeah, she did, yeah. I mean, I wasn't going to do it. I actually was, and I had it all planned out. But then I'm so slow moving that it definitely would have got done, but it would have been a decade. And in the same way that I actually, it's 2016, and I don't have a website.
Well, you do have a website.
Well, yeah.
But it's just the front page is from your 2012 tour dates.
Yeah.
And the second page is under construction. Yeah. Please yeah. wait, it will be here soon.
Well, it's because I keep thinking that I'm going to, when I get round to it, it'll be really great. It'll
yeah.
be a really brilliant website. But obviously I never get round to it. And then I sort of think to myself, oh God, I should probably do that. But then I start thinking, well, maybe the internet is a flash in the pan. and I'll be wasting my time.
It's true. There's every chance it could do. But we both appeared in the same newspaper article. I can't remember which newspaper it was, but it was about comedians going out with other comedians.
Oh, in the Independent?
So, yeah, so
the one that said that John Robbins had a love sex drive. Because I do a radio show with John, and
yes.
and that had, we used to be Saturday mornings at 10, and I think it must have come online at about 10:06 or something, and he was halfway through the first link, and he was skim reading it as he was doing the link. She was like, "Anyway, it's John Robbins and S. James. We're with you until 1 p.m." Whoa, whoa, whoa! Sex drive. And I hadn't read the article. I just thought it had come from nowhere. I just thought for hours he'd been thinking, I need to broach this. Too many people are spreading rumours about me that I've got a low sex drive, and when I finally get round to addressing this, there's going to be no stopping me. And the top of the link had been, as far as we go, fairly slick.
Yeah.
So obviously we'll have all of our regular features. We've got great music coming from. Whoa, whoa! And it was very, very funny. But you look quite nice in the photo.
Well, yeah, we didn't. Everyone else is larking around a bit too much.
Oh, we lark around too much. We look like a terrible, like sort of puppet double act. Because the photos were done in our house.
Yes.
And there were a load of sort of toys in the living room, and they took probably, in the way that happens with photo shoots, they took 850 photos of Izzy and I looking quite nice and normal. Yeah. And then the 851st photo, I picked up the puppet, and we both touched our noses in that way that, like, comedians did in the 60s.
Yeah.
And obviously that's the photo they used, and we look like a right pair of twats.
It did. They all, and John and Sarah were, like, she
well, I
was
jumping,
Sarah, she was
I think
straddling
Sarah's him. On his back, but it sort of looks... It looks like acceptable larking, whereas we look like cunts, sadly.
But do you think there are a few comedy couples, and I've given up on winning, being the best comedian of my generation, and now are you doing the same? I'm kind of focusing on making my daughter as funny as possible, so she wins.
It's going quite well,
funniest,
actually.
Yeah,
she is funny. Like the thing, she's only one, but the thing she does at the moment is, whenever she walks into a room, she goes, "Oh, here she comes." So she announces her arrival by going, "Oh, here she comes." And it's because I've been saying it for as long as she can walk, and she thinks that is the thing you say when you walk into a room. She thinks everyone does it, and it is normal. And at the moment, it's so charming, but... Yeah. When
but
she's 16,
her,
here she comes.
If you don't tell her, you can, and abuse her, you know, you can you can, she will be funny. Yeah, she'll
it is funny.
Yeah,
you know?
So
and it's funny every time.
Yeah,
and like I will get it. The thing I got it to do today was I was saying, do you love Gran? And I got to go, no, disgusting. And that is funny for now.
Yeah.
But you're storing up problems for yourself later down
or
the line.
Or creating a super comedian. You know, two comedians come together, make a better comedian than either of them.
Oh, I'd be thrilled with that.
But then it's a race to see which of that generation. They're like the Muppet Babies of comedians. And they could be in a
double act.
Yeah.
I'd be up for that.
Yeah. Well, I think I should do, mine should be in a double act with one of Stuart's.
Oh, of course, yeah.
I think then they can just literally, because one of Stuart's kids looks exactly like him.
Yeah, it's terrifyingly so.
And the other one looks exactly like Bridget.
Yeah, terrifyingly so. It's amazing.
So they can literally Muppet Babies. If I can have a boy one, I mean, I think my daughter looks quite like me. We could literally do just Lee and Herring, the next generation. Give them the same scripts.
Oh, yeah, that's...
Or what I thought would be quite good is I do a double act with Stuart's son. And it's
the status when he's 18, remains the
when
same.
He's, yeah,
but he's sarcastic. He takes a piss out of you. You're this hangdog guy in his 60s.
It's just like
some sarcastic 18-year-old.
It's just like somehow he's been frozen in time, and I've got old. That would be part of it. So it'd be the same scripts we're going, but I would be acting as if maybe overnight I've aged and had a terrible aging.
I would absolutely love that.
Yeah, but I've got to work it out with Stuart's son when he's old enough.
Yeah.
To... This side, well, he wants to do that.
I mean, I've met Stuart's son, and I'm sure he'll be bang up for that.
If you've got, there aren't enough double acts of a quite old man and a small child. There's the crankies, that's it, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's the crankies.
Oh, my God.
It would be good just because Stu would hate it so much. That is the best thing about it.
Yeah. I mean... Would you? I mean, I don't know if any arguments and stuff you had in the sort of 90s, if they could resurface, but like rebooted versions, where Stuart's boy is like, "Oh, you've forgotten to pack the right hologram, Richard, you 60-year-old twat," and he's you're like, "Oh, sorry, we're going to lose money on this tour."
That's something to think about. But, you know, what I'm saying is there is a definite.
I wonder if it'd be with Avalon. Yeah. That's one for the comedy nerds.
There's a definite competition, and it's who is the best kid out of our kids as a comedian that is the best, not us.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the competition.
All right, then.
Good.
I'm trying to think of other funny stuff. I mean, it changes because she sort of. They go through weird phases of. Like she says, "See you tomorrow" all the time.
Right.
But when I'm going to see you in the next 5 minutes. So I dropped her off at a childminder today. And she went, "Okay, see you tomorrow." And I was like, no, you're not at a sleepover. I'm picking you up in 5 hours' time.
Yeah.
I mean, that wasn't as funny if you weren't there. I think that can all come out in the edit.
No way.
He won't know it.
Got to put the flops in as well as the successes. That's the rules. They are. They're not. You know, yours is a little bit three or four months older.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a fun stage when they start to talk and walk around in a sarcastic way.
I mean, she occasionally repeats swear words of mine.
Yeah.
Which is, this is a real quandary for me.
Yeah.
Because it's funny. But it's not cool, is it? So I have a 1-year-old to go, "Oh, for fuck's sake." she filled her nappy at the worst. I was about to leave the house and I was late. And it came at the worst possible time. And I said, "Have you done a poo?" And she went, "Oh, yeah." And I opened her nappy and went, "Oh, fuck's sake." And she went, "Oh, for fuck's sake." I thought, "Oh, God! Oh, she sounds like Ray Winston now! Oh, dear!" But I didn't reprimand her, because I thought, if she knows it's a thing, then she'll start doing it for attention. So I just left it, and I'm now watching my language a bit more.
Yeah, it's a worry.
It is a worry, but again, it is funny.
Well, what? It's when you do when you use any irony of any kind. So if you say something ironically offensive, my wife gets very upset and says you can't say that stuff in front
of them. Yeah, although if our kids become comics, if they start doing gigs young enough, like if my daughter started doing Jonglers and she was five, she could open by swearing and that would get a laugh.
It should. Definitely would. Let me ask you another question. Okay. As I understand it, is my job. So I just did a bit of filling there to see where we got to. Let's talk about Wales and your part in their victory.
Oh yeah. I mean, well, obviously most people won't know this, but I was making daily videos for BBC Wales when Wales were at the European Championships at the Euros. Yes. Watched by one person. Yeah. So sort of, that means they'll be coming back for 2018. And I made a radio show as well every Friday for the duration of the tournament.
Yeah.
And to be honest, they had only commissioned it to the groups. And then we went on to get to the semi-final, which was absolutely one of the best
experiences
of my life. Oh, my God. Because we have been rubbish all my life. And the frustrating thing is I used to have quite a good opening line when I did stand-up about how rubbish Wales were at football.
Yeah.
And it worked everywhere apart from once in Southend when a bloke, I think, must have confused me with someone else because he went, "I'm not paying all this money to hear you talk about football again!" And I'd never done that gig before. And then he got really upset and he started listing all of England's sporting achievements and asking me to come up with sort of equivalents.
Yeah.
And it was in the first 30 seconds of the gig. And so it then became like a weird sort of more, slightly less aggressive version of Question of Sport. It was like, "Cricket World Cup, how have you done in that?" And I was like, "Well, it's the England and Wales cricket ball technique." "Shut up!" obviously, Simon Jones played for England during the 2005 Ashes. "I haven't paid do you hear you talk about Welsh sport again? I've never done it before, mate. Not in Southend." I can't remember what I was talking about. Oh yeah, because we aren't qualified for a World Cup. We aren't qualified for a major tournament since prior to the invention of the duvet. And I should say that at the start of gigs, and obviously I can't say anymore, and I don't have an opening line. I can't think of a better one. So I just need to wait another 58 years, and then I can use that one. And
I mean, it'll never happen again, right?
So no, of course not. No, it was my golden summer.
Yeah.
I mean, it was. It's funny because I've been watching Wales play since 1993. And apart from a brief period in about between 92 to 94 and then the start of the 2000s, we were absolute rubbish. Like, we lost to Leighton Orient, who were a club side. We lost to Holland 7-1. I mean, we were managed by Bobby Gould, who decided to design the kit as well as manage the team badly. And he made us train in Usk prison. And he got locked in one of the cells by mistake. And it was just a sort of... It was just a complete car crash following the Welsh football team. And what's the other one of my favourite? When we lost 7-1, Neville Southall, the goalkeeper, was man of the match. I mean, we would have lost 25-0 if he hadn't played out of his skin. And then I remember once we played Cumbrian Town. And he played a full... And he obviously was a slightly odd choice. And he said, "Listen, I just want to see, you know, some of our younger players and all that sort of stuff. So it's just a training exercise, basically." So we played Cumbrian Town and we beat them. And he scored a goal. He brought himself on, even though he was in his 50s and not eligible to play for the team. And that was my whole experience, like, throughout my life. So to suddenly get to the semi-finals, it was like this. It was like I was tripping or something. It was bizarre, but great.
Yeah. And how was it when they were lost in the semi-finals? Like when you thought they... I mean, it felt like they might win that game out of all of
it
them.
It did
as well.
Because I don't think Portugal are that good a side, but we have two...
They're the European champions.
Yeah, but we have two great play outstanding sort of creative talents in Ramsey and Bale, and you can't do it without one of them. And obviously Ramsey missed that game, and I hate to go on about this, but when we played Brazil in the 1958 World Cup quarter-final, John Charles didn't play because he was kicked out of the game against Hungary, and then when we played Romania in 1993, Mark Hughes didn't play because of Anita's booking against Cyprus 2 months before. Now, obviously, it was the semi-final of the Euros, and Aaron Ramsey didn't play, and I'm probably going to think about that for the next 1,000 years, Richard.
Maybe if the players didn't break the rules, then they would be in the game.
All right, Dad.
Oh, well, good. I think a lot of comedians were just thinking about you all the time. Just every now and again, a video would come up on Facebook of you going insane.
Yeah,
it was I can't believe it.
And because we're a small country and we've never really, well, we've come very close but have never done it. People were, even English people were quite sort of. There was a lot of goodwill from English comics who wanted Wales to do well. Whereas I don't think that would have been the case from Scottish or Welsh comics, if I don't know who it would have been, you know, if Josh would have come very into the England football team. I mean, if he'd been doing videos, I think I'd have been taking the piss. Whereas I used to get lots of texts from people saying, "Oh, that was great.
Yeah.
I hope you go on and win it." God, if we'd won it, oh my giddy aunt, I'd have gone to the pub for 20 years. And it would have been the best 20 years of what would prove to be quite a short life.
I, in a way, though, I mean, I like football, but not as much as you do.
Right.
And
that's fine. Yeah. A lot of people think I can only talk about one thing.
No.
But I can talk about, you know, Welsh communists in the 1940s. I can talk about football. You know,
I wouldn't talk about
all of the topics.
I felt what the Euro showed was that essentially football is quite a stupid game.
Oh yeah, but that's why it's great, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's
because it's shit for most of the time.
There's just so much luck in it. I just think there's just too much luck in it.
And a lot of it is, I mean, the thing with football, I've stopped trying to persuade people who don't like it the reasons as to why it's good now.
Yeah,
because David Mitchell doesn't like music.
Yeah.
So he was on Desert Island Discs, and he only owns 2 CDs. So he will never know what it's like to see a band he really loves or to listen to a record that means a lot to him. But you can't persuade him now. And if a comedian, I don't know, Michael Legg, the comedian, he tried to get into football like for a bet or something last year.
Yeah.
And I would meet up with him in the pub, and I would try and explain why beating Preston 3-1 in the FA Cup in 2005 was one of the most cherished memories of my life. And you sound mental. Because you would just say, but it's just men kicking a ball about. Yeah. And you sort of can't argue with that logic. And you go, yes, but I've invested so much in those men. Those men mean more to me than you will ever know.
It's strange, though, isn't it? I mean, I get that, and I've, you know, supported teams. I just felt the Euros, particularly Portugal winning it, I felt was just like, that's a real disappointment. I mean, they didn't win a game in real time.
Yes.
In normal time, in the whole thing, did they?
No, they didn't. No. Against Wales. Yeah, we were the first ones. And yeah, but the 2014 World Cup was absolutely fantastic. So, and I think it was very fashionable about 10 or 15 years ago for football writers in the broadsheets to say football's going to eat itself, it's too expensive, and transfer prices have gone through the roof, and ticket prices are too expensive, and eventually it will sort of wither and die. But the game, especially if you look at 2014, or if you look at players like Ronaldo and Messi and Bale, the game is better than ever, I think. The game is still brilliant. Like, when we beat Belgium and 3-1, when we beat Russia 3-0, that was sort of football at its most visceral and thrilling, I think. Mm. So it can still be brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
And Leicester, who would have seen that?
Well, there's more.
That was an extraordinary thing.
It is. It's amazing. And over that many games, I think
it's a course of achievement. Before that, it would be Nottingham Forest winning the European Cup.
Yeah.
That is probably the last comparable thing. But and people would say, well, that will never happen now because the defence. Like, Lionel Messi is an absolute magician, and he is doing it in an era when no defenders smoke. Like, Arsenal won the double in the late 90s, and their back four were all alcoholics. I mean, it is astonishing. Tony Adams had drunk before games in the past, if you read his book. And yet that United team were all, like, drunks. And Lionel Messi, they're the most drilled defences of all time. Everyone's mega fit, and yet he is still dancing around them. So in a way, and you would assume that sort of creative flair player would sort of be replaced by some sort of robot man by now. But I still think it's a wonderful game. But I've also, like, Izzy detests football.
Yeah.
And after the Russia game, she texted me at full time. Wow, well done. Congratulations, 10 exclamation marks, and then 40 champagne cork popping emojis, right? Because she's only just got into emojis. And it was this, I thought, wow. And I called her up, and I'm still at the ground. And I went, it was amazing, wasn't it? She went, yeah. And I went, did you watch it? And she went, no. And she sort of vaguely understands that it was quite a big deal for me. But, you know, I don't like Italian house music, and I don't like fantasy sort of novels.
Yeah,
and I can understand that if you're into Terry Pratchett, you know, it means a lot to you, but it's not real. Whereas football is real. Football is happening in front of me, whereas Discworld.
Yeah.
Is not real. And now I sound like Michael Owen, who has never watched any films because he doesn't understand how fiction cannot be real. So he just refuses point blank to watch any film.
Right.
But, you know.
I support York City, so it's not been a great year for me.
Yeah, but I love that because I was at York City's last game in the league when you got relegated, because you got relegated at Swansea.
Did you just go to see them go
down? No, I didn't. I wasn't there flicking the V's at the away end going, Richard Herring's going to hate this! No, I'm very fond of people who, because I support Swansea.
Yeah.
And we were rubbish throughout my childhood and my teens. So whenever anyone says that they support York City or, you know, Rochdale, I far prefer those people to people going, well, actually, to be honest, don't get to go to many games, but I'm more of a sort of Inter Milan guy. Yeah, it's really great, great, great side.
Right.
Sorry, I can be a bit of a bore when it comes to football.
No, that's good.
A lot of that is going to have to come out in the edit.
No, it's all in there. I'm just so tired.
Do you want me to interview? Do you want me to interview you, Rich?
Because
I've had two espressos, you see, so I'm really pumped.
Yeah.
Mainly as a student of this podcast, I'm quite thrilled to be asked, you see. Yeah. So I think that this means more to me than it means to you. It's a bit like the Euros,
I suppose. It means a lot to me. the last one tends to be either something goes horribly wrong or I think.
Great.
The last one, Stephen Merchant, was one of the last of a series. It's been a long old haul. This, you know, that's what I find with the baby. It makes you tired, right?
Yeah. Because their energy is, I've never seen anything like it.
No.
It's like she's on amphetamines all the time, and unless she's very, very sneaky, I know she isn't. And they wake up at bad times. When does your daughter wake up?
6.
Yeah.
The other day, she woke up at 4.
Oh, my
because
sweet
it was so
Christ.
Hot. But then I went and slept down I went down to the cellar where it's a bit colder. And,
in the cellar?
Yeah, it's like
that
a room. It's not
bad.
Like... It's, it's like a proper room. But then
because people,
then she slept half
eight. People with dads and kids in cellars got previous, didn't they?
I didn't leave her down there. Have Christmas with my other family. Let's talk about your pre-comedy work, because there's not much on, as you were discussing, you're not interested in the internet, and there's not much about you on Wikipedia. There is Wikipedia about you.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who wrote that.
Information.
I think it's I don't know who that person is.
You worked, before you were a comedian, you were in a band, and you worked
in
temp
work. I was a temp. I never made any money out of the band. But then again, you've got to be basically in Genesis to make money out of music. So, I loved it. I'm actually quite proud of that stuff, but we probably made 350 quid in 2 years or something. And but we did a Six Music session, which was our high watermark. We played Glastonbury as well. But I was a temp. But the reason I'm... Because I do a radio show with John Robbins, and one of the things in our dynamic is that I'm fairly happy-go-lucky, and I just don't really... I'm quite laid back. Like, I don't really care about a lot of stuff. And he cares about everything, like, too much. And it's quite a funny dynamic for us on the radio, because he is sort of demonstrably cleverer and funnier than I am. But I am more successful than him. and he is at his funniest when he's jealous. So it's absolutely perfect. Yeah. I mean, it's just the way it's worked out. And I sort of... But the reason, one of the reasons I'm quite positive is that I was so unsuited to real work, so profoundly, pathologically, clinically unsuited to real work. I can't believe that comedy is my living. I got sacked from a temp job for slouching once, right? When I worked for Transco, the gas company, and I was temping there, and I got sacked for slouching and not fitting in. And I was only there for 3 days. And on day two, my boss's friend walked into the toilet. And I was leaning against the mirror like this, just going, oh God, 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 oh God. And I'd been in there for like 40 minutes. They thought I had big problems, you know. And then he came in, and I knew he knew my line manager, and I thought, oh God, oh God. So I stayed in there for another 5 minutes. And then when I came back out, he was going to my boss. Yeah, he was leaning against the mirror, just muttering, oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God, and then I got sacked an hour later. So, but that used to happen all the time.
Right.
And it was starting to get a bit of a worry, because I thought, I've got to do something.
Yeah.
And then I started doing stand-up and realised that I could do that, and even if I could just scrape a living, I was only scraping a living as a temp, and at least I wouldn't, you know, be muttering to myself. Well, actually, that is what happens in the car on long journeys, but yeah.
And so you're doing lots of acting now?
Yeah.
You and Josh? So
yes.
Did you meet Josh Widdicombe on the circuit?
On the circuit, yeah. When he was very, very new, and then we did my first Edinburgh show was a triple header with him and a comic called Matt Price. And we did Edinburgh 2008. And Josh was, obviously, he was very, very funny from the start, but. You know when you meet someone and you've read absolutely the same stuff and seen exactly the same TV programmes and have listened to the same radio shows? It was an almost uncanny meeting of sort of cultural references. So, and Matthew Crosby actually is the same. So we text each other very oblique references to the 90s, and they will always get them. You can't go too niche.
Right.
With Widdicombe and Crosby when it comes to the mid-90s in particular. Okay. We went to a party the other day, and we were the last three up, and we were watching the first two episodes of TFI Friday at 5 in the morning. I thought, we need to get over this. I mean, so, but, so I've known Josh since he just... I was going a bit longer than him.
Right.
But and then I was in a sketch group with him called Soup Clump, which was... Me and Josh Widdicombe and Mike Wozniak from Man Down, and Henry Packer, who's done lots of stuff, and there was loads of us. Tom Crane, who writes on The Last Leg and who wrote Josh, and Nat Lertzimer and Sian Harris, who wrote Man Down. There was nine of us in total. I'm going to forget. Henry Widdicombe, who runs the Machynlleth Comedy Festival. Is that all of them? Me?
I wasn't counting.
No, but we were like a big sort of peer group, and we decided if we all got on, why don't we? Oh, Ben Partridge, who's written loads of stuff as well. I'm obviously going to forget someone, and it's going to be awful. But
it's all right. It's not the Oscars, mate. It's fine.
No, that's true. I was going to do Halle Berry then. I was going to start crying. But So Josh had always said, if I write something, I'll put you in it. Cool. So it was very nice of him.
Wish I'd made better friends with him
Yeah. Well, you know, if we get a third series,
can I play a postman in it?
Yeah, I think
I tried
so,
to
yeah.
do it with the
like a creepy paedophile postman.
I think I've tried to do a thing, and I tried to get the Pappies guys to do it, and they never did.
Okay.
I played a postman in Time Jennifer Please, and I thought it would just be funny if I played
that
a postman.
Your thing.
If I played a postman in every single sitcom.
All right, then.
There
if,
ever
I,
was.
If I write a sitcom,
I don't know any postman my age now.
I promise I'll make you a postman.
Okay.
The creepy paedophile sex pest postman.
It's all I get.
Recurring character, so you become famous for it. Ding dong. Oh God. Please say it's Amazon. No, it's Richard the Postman. Oh, Christ.
It's Richard Herring the Postman.
Yeah, Richard Herring, the paedophile postman. Oh, God. And you've got to give your full title as well. Sorry, the package was too big to post. What, again? A likely story. Yes. Do you mind signing for that, please? Then I can tell my boss that you signed for it with Richard Herring, the creepy paedophile postman. Oh, you're Welsh in this sitcom as well. You'll have to do your voice.
I'd absolutely happy to do that.
Thank you. Same time tomorrow.
I mean, you should play him. You're very good at
Well, I'll give you, plenty of notes in the rehearsal period. No, no, Richard, it's more, see you tomorrow. Yet another package is too big for your box. And then the word for the channel will be, yeah, it's tonally very different to the rest of the show. And so I said, yeah, but it's my show. It's been commissioned. You told me in good faith that you were going to back me in my ideas. And this is my creative vision. It is a very, very realistic, office-style, single-camera sitcom that has Richard Herring, the creepy paedophile postman, and he comes on every day because we are consistently buying things online that are too big to post. And that is his voice. He trails off in a creepy way. I don't know if you've been shopping online, but tomorrow's actually my day off, so maybe you'll have a different postman. And you will win a BAFTA for it. I don't know if they do the comedy awards anymore, but you are an absolute shoo-in for that BAFTA. Best newcomer.
Best newcomer.
And it'd be like, you'll get up there and it'd be hosted by Graham Norton or whatever. People are like, do the voice! I'd just like to thank my management at Avalon. I'd like to thank Ellis, obviously, for writing. Oh, yeah. I mean, as an actor, you can only go as far as the script. That's the raw material you've been given to play. You know, he's such a talented scriptwriter. Thank you to my wife and my daughter's watching at home. Daddy's on the telly. Yeah, sort of refer to yourself as Daddy.
It is the only kind of parts I get. But I have to say, this year I've been a man who using an escort who then something happens. He ends up having sex with a man accidentally, but is sort of okay about it.
Right.
I've paid a husband who has done something very stupid while his wife's away. I can't say what that is because that ruins the whole film, but it's sort of disgusting. I've played. A very smelly man who uses an S&M prostitute, and she doesn't want to. She wants him to shower because he's so disgusting. I've played a man who has sex with a robot and a man who wanks people off from behind a curtain. Admittedly, I wrote those two.
Right.
What's the other one? The other one's a man being. I was in bed with Lou Sanders all day being... she was met for late to me, but then commenting on the size of my penis.
Right, okay.
Then I wrote that
When I occasionally complain to Izzy that whenever I get seen for auditions and castings and things, I'm always playing a sarcastic coward. Yeah. But, I mean, yours is much worse. I'd far rather be a sarcastic coward to sort of... You've really carved an awful niche for yourself.
None of them know. None of them have watched the other things and gone, oh, we'll get him into this. They've gone, oh, we need a smelly pervert. Oh, yeah, Richard Herring. I've never been to a prostitute in my life.
Good man.
I always shower every day. I don't know why they would think that. I
got case rests, Your Honour.
I got an audition for Sherlock. I was going to play an indignant man. He didn't have a name.
Who didn't have his name? Right.
Yeah,
okay.
But, like, I didn't get it.
Oh.
And I was really indignant because I'd had a really difficult journey getting there. So, fuck. If I can't get this, I can't get anything.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see who the indignant man is when it comes up.
Yes, whenever I don't get something, I'm always fascinated at that.
I knew I wasn't right for it, but it'd been kind of cool. I would have been playing against
Sherlock. Were you too dignant?
I think I was too dignant. I don't think I was very... I could picture who they want. You know, you go to an audition, you go, I can picture what they want, and it isn't me. So the only auditions I've ever got are for that I know I can get this one. But all the others, I kind of go, yeah, I don't know why I'm bothering.
Usually, it's usually stuff.
This guy's not a would never use a prostitute.
Well, I was in Roisin Conaty's pilot Game Face.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Playing Chicken Man, and that was
that was
written for me.
Yeah.
As in a slightly weird guy who works in a chicken shop. Roisin's like, yes. So it tends to be people think of me first and then write the part as opposed to me going in and getting it, because I'm either too dignant or indignant. So I've never been able to square that circle.
It's bad when the character name is the attribute of what the person is.
Yes, I was in a Krakenori as stressed office guy.
Right. Yeah.
If you're
you how to do your part, you know.
Yeah.
Just write it well. Call him Simon. I'll work out how dignant or indignant he is.
I think I could do Craig. He's quite dignant.
So there's more Josh coming up.
Yeah, we just finished actually. So I don't know when it's going out. I would hope around the same time. But we finished it in a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that. And it was loads of fun because it's great because working with Jack D and also working with your friends is a very...
That's a nice thing to
It's
get.
Such a brilliant thing.
Yeah.
Because I don't subscribe to the idea or the myth that comedians are all dicks who are jealous and hate each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like all of my... When I worked in offices, I met some real whoppers.
Yeah.
But on the circuit, I get on with everyone on the circuit and...
That's to your face, but behind your back... But the things they say about you.
In the main, I think we're quite...
I think there's a very supportive group. I mean, I think everything's always a little bit cliquey and, whatever clique you're in, you look at the other cliques and whatever, or if you're not in any of them. But, I think it is... I think that idea that comedians are all furiously angry with each other and bitter about it with each other, I think is not representative.
I think that, from what I understand... Because I'm very interested in the history of comedy, and from what I understand, the early alternative... circuit in the 80s, especially in London, because it was very London-centric, wasn't it? There were more crackpots. So what I found, I started doing stand-up in 2005, and it was actually before Live the Apollo, but I was still aware that there were enough comedy clubs in the country that I would be able to earn a living from it, and they probably weren't going to go anywhere, so I could be a sort of career comedian rather than a temp.
Yeah.
Whereas a few generations above me, who'd start in the 80s and the 90s, they're far more hedonistic than my peer group because they often left normal jobs to be comics. And because I think in 1991, you could justifiably think, well, the bubble's going to burst and this comedy club phenomenon is going to run out of steam.
Mm-hmm.
They treated, from what I understand, every gig as a sort of party. And there are still comics who are 50 doing that, whereas I'm 35 and I remember once I did Up the Creek in Greenwich, and it's a very established club, and it was me and Rob Beckett and a much older comic, and someone came in and went, do you want any drinks? And I said, I'll have a Diet Coke, please. And Rob said, I'll have a Diet Coke. And the other comic was like, Jesus Christ! I remember when people were drinking proper Coke at this gig and taking Coke. And Rob went, yeah, but I want to get rebooked.
Yeah.
And I think there probably were more weirdos and crackpots who were furious and jealous and angry in 1989. But
yeah, I think that might be true up to an extent. I think there is it's become more professional in the same way football is, you know, people could be drunk and play football in the 80s and 90s. Yeah, I mean, when I went to Edinburgh, it was about having fun rather than getting drunk. Well, and
yeah, although my first Edinburgh was in 2008, and I did the Comedy Zone, and then I did the show with Josh that year as well, and we got drunk every night, and it was absolutely brilliant. And then I did my first solo show in 2009, and I got drunk every night, and it was absolutely brilliant. And then because those shows got the solo show in particular got reviewed quite well, so then in 2010. People knew who I was, whereas because I was based in Cardiff, no one really cared in 2009.
Yeah.
And then I started to become less hedonistic because it sort of mattered.
I think, but you know, because it's the same as being a student now. You know, it costs so much. You know, it didn't cost us anything to be students when I was a student, and so you could just go and waste 3 years messing around. But the idea of doing that now would be insane. And the same with Edinburgh. You're going to Edinburgh to lose £12,000, you at least need to do a fantastic show.
And it's one of my favourite things to tell people who aren't in the comedy industry. Oh, if you go up with certain producers, you can sell out every ticket on every night you're performing over 30 nights. I will often do this. I'll say, how much money do you think you'll make? And they always go, oh, well, obviously your costs, that's probably about 500 quid. how much you make? 10 grand? I'll say, no, you lose £12,000. But you are seen as people will tell you that you're investing in your career, and it just knocks people's socks off.
Yeah.
So obviously, you know, you're not going to go up and get shit faced.
No. Well, you know, you can't do. But it is an interesting change. I don't know. Maybe it was more like it was. You know, when I was doing it in 1989, 1990. That's when I first sort of was on the circuit, and I think it was more mainly men. And quite individual men trying to promote their own career, and it wasn't like a combined thing because you were a stand up trying to do stand up. You weren't thinking I'll get my own sitcom or I'll get my own whatever out of it. So you know, you were competing for work, I suppose.
Well, one of my favourite gigs is the Cardiff Glee Club, the Glee chain. I really love Birmingham and Cardiff and Nottingham and Oxford, and I used to do a lot of those gigs. And Lee used to run the Cardiff Glee Club. He used to say in the late 90s they would have this guy, you'll know him probably. He used to smash up vinyl.
Woody Bot Murray.
Yeah, so he would, from what I understand, he would hold up a 12-inch Erasure record and say, Erasure, yes or no? The audience would go, no, and he'd go, all right then! And then he'd get a hammer and he'd just smash the record up for 20 minutes and he'd go, you be great, thank you! And there was that guy who used to carve with ice.
Yeah, yeah.
But the Glee's now a mainstream... Yeah. You know, standard sort of comedy. The idea of booking that is
well, there was
insane.
Loads of guys. There were loads of guys that were just crazy. I mean, Chris Lynham is about the only.
Well, he used to put fireworks up his bum.
Yeah, but he has a proper. I mean, he's like a clown, and he has a proper act, and
he's quite big in Europe as well. Chris Lynham.
I mean, he's brilliant.
Yeah,
he's not. A lot of them were insane. You know,
he's brilliant, but he's certainly not a man in his 20s talking about things he's noticed. he's a man with a firework in his anus.
Yeah.
So it's sort of, they are two opposite ends of the same spectrum, I think.
But there was a lot of that. And, the, you know, guys, I imagine, were taking a lot of drugs and coming up with weird ideas.
Well, also, I mean, one of the things I found, I did four of my shows on the trot, 2009 to 2012, and I haven't been up since actually. And then the thing I've noticed is that as I got older, it became harder to write material because my life was settling down. So I was a real idiot in my 20s. Like, I just used to get stuff wrong all the time. And I used to have a routine in my first Edinburgh show where I took ecstasy and I went paintballing by mistake. It genuinely happened, and obviously I was coming down, and But I was being shot at. Like, it was the worst day of my life. And sort of, and also, because I'd gone by mistake and it was all horrific, and I was behind a barrel. I thought, oh yeah, that was it. Because I didn't have my wallet with me, so I couldn't afford to buy any bullets, right? So I'm sort of, so I can't even defend myself, right? So I just got being given this redundant gun, and I remember I was sat behind a barrel, and I'd been there for about an hour, and the instructor said, you can't shoot someone from point blank range. You say surrender, and then the person says surrender back, and then they've got to go to the dead zone.
Right.
But if they don't say surrender back, it's open season, you can do what you want. And this guy came running behind me and he went, surrender. And I said, I don't know what you want from me. And he just shot me about 50 times. And it was an absolutely awful day. A really hard day.
Yeah.
But obviously, I don't do any of that stuff anymore.
Yeah.
And then your life becomes more boring. So you need different ways of coming up with stuff, because... like, I know where my driving license is now. That was just an absolute pipe dream 10 years ago. The idea that I would know where that was, or I know where my passport is. I know where Izzy's passport is.
Yeah.
But then as that happens, you need different methods of coming up with stuff, or you're just talking about how proud you are that you know where your passport is. And as the audience reaction attests, it's not good enough, is it? There's nothing in that.
They all know where their passports are.
Yeah, I know.
They always have known.
God, I would have loved to have been that person.
So, well, how are you coming up with material now?
Well, I'm just not bothering. I don't think I'll ever stop doing stand-up, but I do less of it.
Yeah.
Because I do acting and the radio show and stuff. And the thing that's actually what's sort of replacing the stand-up is John and I are going on tour.
Yeah.
In the autumn, and so what used to be me doing comedy clubs is now me and John doing gigs together.
Yeah.
And it's that's brilliant, because I loved being in a sketch group, because I like collaborating. Like, I don't actually believe that sort of auteur myth where you're meant to do it all on your own, and my favourite thing is to be in a room with someone. I was one of the writers on Stand Up for the Week, and it was nice being in a room with other funny people trying to come up with material. And with John, obviously, it's nice sort of improvising with him on stage.
Yeah.
Because we know each other so well. Sure. So, you know, I can set him up for stuff and he can set me up for stuff. And that is, at the moment, more exciting than stand-up. I don't think I would ever stop doing it, because it's still how I see myself. Because I'm always... It took a while to sort of become half-decent... And so I think if I stop, then I'll forget, and then I'll never be able to relearn. So
I think
I'm
you do, sort of... but you can stop. I think you can relearn. I saw Frank Skinner's first gig back after he'd taken a
his very first one.
When he'd taken a long time off.
Yeah.
And I saw, I think the first one, he was in Montreal. And it was in front of an audience who didn't have any knowledge of who he was.
Yeah, and that sounds like an anxiety dream.
Yeah, but he was, you know, it was bad. He'd lost it, and he was bad, and he kind of got that thing. He did that thing that you do when you're an inexperienced comedian. There's something on the floor, and you know, like we're up and going, oh, there's something on the floor down there. None of the audience can see what it is. You know, he completely, and then within a month, I then saw his show, and he was back.
Yeah, well, this whole, because Alan Davis took a long time off, and he's now brilliant again.
Yeah,
but you know, I'm assuming that there was an adjustment period. And I remember doing a gig at the Birmingham Glee with an act who'd taken 7 years off to write a sitcom.
Yeah.
And he was terrified as well.
Yeah.
Because it was a big gig for him. When you talk to older acts who've taken time off to write books or whatever, they always tell you about this readjustment period, which I'm so terrified of having to go through. I did a gig with Adil O'Hanlon, and he does a few a month because he's scared of it as well.
Yeah.
And it's just, it is weird. I did Edinburgh in 2011, and I was probably the sharpest I've ever been. And then Izzy and I went on holiday for a fortnight, and I was doing Up the Creek, first gig back. And I'd been away for 2 weeks, and I was comparing. I was like, hi, hey, man, what do you do for a job? And he was like, I'm a builder. And I was like, what, still a builder? And he went, well, what? And I was like, are you still a builder now? And he went, yeah. I was like, oh, that is really great. And I'd gone from being the sharpest I've ever been to not being able to function properly. And then by the second half, I was normal again, but it sort of took 15 minutes.
Definitely, you know, two or 3 weeks off, I think, is enough to...
And often, when you're doing stand-up, if a gig is tricky or something, you will be going through your Rolodex of routines and thinking, okay, well, I probably can't end on that because the audience are too tired or they're too rowdy or raucous or whatever. So you're trying to work out other stuff that you can do whilst doing the routine.
Which,
like I was telling my dad this, my dad just couldn't believe that it could be done. But it's actually quite easy. So you're doing the routine on autopilot and you're thinking about the gig whilst you're doing it. But then if you've had a couple of weeks off, that then becomes impossible. And then in my case, I will often start vocalising the thing I'm meant to be thinking in my mind. So I'll come out of a routine halfway through and go, oh, yeah, they're quiet and it's hot. Sorry. Sorry. Oh, God, did I? Yes, I did. Is the yeah. So that is why I would never quit. Because
but if you do too many gigs, then the voice in your head starts to fuck you up and try and trip you up. That's what, when I'm on a long tour... And you've done that, maybe 12 days in a row, then your voice in your head's going, what if you forget how to speak? What if you just suddenly forget what language is? And, and you say, and you're, it's all coming out, and that voice that does all that stuff is really then trying to fuck you up.
I try not to introduce people because I've got a voice in my head that, say, my mum was here now.
Yeah.
And I had to introduce you to my mum. I would bottle out with it in the last second because, as I'm about to say, hey, mum, this is Richard. My head would go, but what if it wasn't Richard? What if you've been getting his name wrong for the whole time you've known him? And he's called Seb. So I will say, hi, Mom, this is... Oh. And I did it on the radio. I did it on... Joe Good is after us on Radio X.
Yeah.
And it was the last link of the show. I was like, anyway, John and I will be back with you next week between 1 and 4 p.m. Up next is... Because I thought, imagine if it wasn't Joe Good, and I know it's Joe Good, and I've known Joe Good for 2 years, and I know she's called Joe Good. Imagine, I thought, if I've been getting her name wrong for 2 years, she will hate me. And everyone is too polite and British to tell me that I've got it wrong. So I thought, the only sane thing to do is to just go, oh, for a bit, and then hope that John takes over, which is what he did. And he went, it's Joe Good with a belt. And he was looking at me, and I thought, oh, it's happened again. There are basically about six names of people I'm comfortable introducing. And I can't not think that is going to happen.
No, it's terrifying. Yeah. I, you know, that is terrifying.
Hopefully you'll start thinking of that now. And
well,
it's
no, but I don't really think
contagious.
That. You've got one of those names that's, you know, I have to keep on looking at to make sure I've definitely got it right.
That's all right.
Because I know what it is.
That's good, that's comforting.
But I have to keep looking. I know what it is, but then I just have to keep looking.
But that's comforting, because that makes me think. Because if you had got my name wrong, I wouldn't have been bothered, because I know I've got people's names wrong in the past.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting, because that's what annoys me, is when you get someone's name wrong and they're furious about it.
Yeah.
Because I'm never furious about it. People call me Stuart, and people, you know, I just go, my name's Richard. I'm never angry about it, but some people like her, you met me 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And I introduced you in the party.
It's Michael, not Mickey.
Anyway. I've no idea who you are, but it's been lovely. It's been lovely talking to you. I think we better let these nice people.
Yeah, really run out of steam the back end of that. But I was trying my best. I've got to be honest.
Good. I thought I was in the middle. I was dead, and then it came alive again. When you start calling me a paedophile, I was I was back.
It's just alive.
I was glad to be alive.
Well, it's just, it's just a sort
I was
of,
just thinking maybe I'd be on the shelly.
It's a rousing
sort of
tactic, isn't it? It's like the opposite of the arm around the shoulder. I thought, I'll go in really hard now, call him something absolutely monstrous, and then that will get this gig going.
The beauty of this is, as I'm sure you know from being on the radio, is, you know, fuck it. You know, it's just like a load of stuff, isn't it? That matters, it?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the beauty of it, doesn't matter.
Do you know what I love about you, Richard? It's your drive. It's just that inherent, instinctive dedication to creating.
But
it's,
you know,
the way
if we've wasted these people's time, they'll eventually forgive us. They'll forget. I mean, if it's boring, especially, they'll just forget it.
Yeah, it wasn't offensive.
No, it wasn't offensive. No. They'll just go and they'll
it's
go,
bad.
Oh. They'll go, well, how was it? How was it tonight? Oh, it's a bit boring. Wake up in the morning. Oh, we didn't see those guys. Yeah, it was all right. 2 weeks' time. Forgot. I forget everything now. That's the thing. I don't remember.
I forget things I've written as well.
I have to write the what happened in this show the next day. I write the little blurb for it. I can never even remember what we talked about.
Oh, I can't wait to see the little
piece. No, I've got no idea. Even now, if you ask me, I've got to think of a title for the show.
Creepy postman.
Yeah, there's that.
One word.
I remember that bit. I do remember that bit. I thought of a good title for the show because my Rolodex is going. Because I want to just have a good title for each show.
Yeah.
Forgotten what it was now. might be pervy postman, paedophile postman.
Okay.
That might be it. You'll know at home whether that was what I chose. So I'll ask you one more question. Let's get some energy back in the room.
Oh my.
Have you ever seen a ghost? I think that's where we'll end the series.
No, but I'd love to. I once got locked in the cellar of a pub in Cardiff by a barmaid who convinced me that there were ghosts down there.
Okay.
But, yeah, 25 minutes later, nothing. Pardon?
Which pub?
It was the Little O'Neill's next to the award-winning pasty shop just off St Mary Street. Do you know which one? Not the big one down the bottom of St Mary Street, but the small one that... Opposite what used to be very posh, the Old England Dude, what used to be a very posh fish and chip shop. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I should have said if anyone wants to need something more specific, do shout out. If we're not being specific enough, should have mentioned at the beginning. Really.
I did a gig in New Zealand, yeah. And I said that I was Welsh at the top, and there was a lady from Lampeter at the back, and I said, "Are there any Welsh people?" And she went, "Yes." And I got a lot of my family from Lampeter. And I said, where are you from? She went, Lampeter. And I said, oh, yeah. I've got a lot of cousins from Lampeter. And she went, what's the name of the farm? I thought, fabulous. Very niche. And I said, and she used to go out with my cousin. It was genuinely incredible.
Nice.
Yeah, but every time we kissed, he would bite. Very weird. So obviously, I had to, you know, we had to put that to bed.
Have you ever seen Ghostbusters, the film Ghostbusters?
I've seen the first one. The first two. I haven't seen the new female.
I've seen all of them.
I haven't seen that one.
I've seen a lot.
I mean, if you
seen one, two, and I've seen one number one again.
What's the new one like? The reboot.
I watched the original one first.
Yeah.
It's not that good.
What, the 1984
movie? Yeah, it's not
recently
that good.
You watched it.
Yeah, I just watched it on Friday.
Right.
Just get in the mood.
Yeah.
It's all right, it's not that good. It's not as good as all
two
these.
Is quite disappointing. Not,
well, I can't bother to do that one. A lot of it's down to Bill Murray being fucking amazing. Yeah. Ironically, Bill Murray is the worst
thing in
the... If you think
that female Ghostbusters ruined your childhood, yeah. You are a pathetic twat, is my opinion. And I could not believe that stuff online.
Well, having seen it as well, that's what's...
Yeah.
It's good. It's good. And the new film, I think, is
I
good.
Really cherish that film. Oh, fuck off.
It's a children's film, and it's a lot of it's quite bad. The new one, I think, is not perfect, but it's as good as the original one. Mm. And what's amazing about it is just my wife loves it. I mean, loved it so much that... She was like a bit Jeremy Corbyn about it. But then I kind of realised, I discussed this. I said, well, you know, I don't think this is... No, it's brilliant. This is all... And then you realise, and then I read an article today about there's a bit which where one of the Ghostbusters fights lots of ghosts. I don't think that's giving away too much. But you see this woman kick ass...
Yeah.
You know, and you kind of go, and not being sexy and not being just doing the
it's
job,
just a
and you kind of just
model.
Think this is an amazing thing, actually, for that as a man, you're never going to quite understand because you've seen that you've had that for yourself your whole life. To see a woman just be a person,
yes.
And do the stuff that needs to be done and be kick ass about it, and not be. Here's my boob, though, while I'm doing it, and look at my lovely ass.
I hope ghosts like boobs.
is just an amazing thing to see. So, you know, and I think, again, with, you know, having your own children having daughters. It's kind of something you go, that you want that. You want to have this. And it's good, you know, it's funny, it's good. The only bad joke is where they do this a lot in Hollywood. I talked about this the other week. They just have a joke where Ozzy Osbourne comes on for no reason and says something, and you kind of go, fuck. And Bill Murray is the second worst thing in it, which is yeah, which is an amazing thing, because Bill Murray usually is amazing.
That role model thing is very interesting, because there were no Welsh role models. Genuinely, I know it's not the same, but
Ivor the Engine.
Yeah, well, exactly. That is it. So with and Neil Kinnock, and so we were like the sort of new Irish in that we were a sort of a punchline.
Yeah.
And then there were just some good bands when I was about 15, and it completely changed the way I saw stuff on it, because I think I thought, oh, okay, well, maybe I could give that a go. Whereas before, it had just been people from London. And you think, all right then. So I assumed I was going to work in my dad's office until, like, the Super Free Animals came along. And then you think, oh, yeah, okay, maybe you don't have to have gone to a public school or grown up not in a small town.
Yeah.
But again, it is not the same. So I don't want anyone...
I think being Welsh is worse than being a woman. And on that bombshell... I'm just going to check your name. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a big round, if I can't read my writing, Ellis James!
You have been listening to Richard Herring's Not Just Got Theatre Podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Ellis James!
The music is by Bess. The people we have to thank are thank you to everyone who's listened to the series. Do tell your friends if you've enjoyed it. Thank you to everyone at Go Faster Strike for helping to make this series. Thanks to everyone at Leicester Square Theatre for letting us sit in their theatre to make this series. Thank you to everyone at the British Comedy Guide for hosting this podcast. Thank you to everyone at iTunes for letting us put it on iTunes as well. Thank you for everyone at YouTube for letting us put it on YouTube. Thanks to everyone at Vimeo for letting us put it on Vimeo. You know, it's nice of you to do that. The producer is Ben Walker. He has not produced this bit, though. That is George, the sound man. He's quite good at doing sounds, as long as you're not that bothered about whether you can hear them or not at the end. It is a Sky Potato production. Nobody else, just Sky Potato. Get over it. Deal with it. Fuzz and Go Faster Stripe has nothing to do with you. Get out of here. Thank you. Goodbye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thanks for listening. Go to gofasterstripe.com for all your Richard Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can, and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too.
Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.